Hi, Peter Mayer here. This is For the Record program number 1370, Korea on Our Minds, part 3. This is being recorded on January 25th of the year 2025. With a terrifying, although predictably perhaps downplayed, element in Asia, having taken place when President Yoon of South Korea not only attempted to establish martial law, but apparently also was going to establish or to reignite the Korean War and very possibly implement false flag operations, killing Korean political figures and media figures, and even very possibly launching false flag attacks, killing American military personnel in order to ignite a war with North Korea. That very possibly would have ultimately resulted in World War III. North Korea is a military power, has a defense contract, defense pact with Russia, and obviously is very close to both Russia and China. And with Donald Trump now in the White House, I certainly would not bet on his restraint and circumspection to refrain from being manipulated by President Yoon. We are taking a look at what has gone on in Korea, what is going on, and in particular, the profound influence on Korean society of the Japanese colonial occupation of Korea from roughly 1905 through the end of World War II. And as we have seen, the influence continued for a much longer period after that time, really pretty much up to the present. And now both South Korea and Japan are fundamental parts of the U.S. alliance against China, which may very well result in a Third World War. Before we get back into the subject material, I want to alert people to the fact that the new 64-gigabyte flash drive will be ready presently. It is not ready now. It will include the programs we're doing about Korea, so it would be worth the wait. The 32-gigabyte flash drive is out of date, and the new 64-gigabyte flash drive is the one that will contain all of the work on Korea, all of the interviews with Monty, and will be right up to date. By the way, that flash drive also includes a mini library of old anti-fascist books. Now, in the article that we concluded our previous program with, we took a look at the influence of, quote, Manchurians, unquote, on contemporary Korea and the development of South Korea. These are people who were involved with the Japanese occupation of Manchuria and the establishment of their puppet state, Manchukuo, and the people who founded the South Korean military police, all of the major institutions of South Korea were basically from not only the Japanese colonial period, but in particular, a large percentage of them were the Manchurians, including Nobusuke Kishi, the Japanese prime minister, who had much to do with solidifying the post-World War II Japanese-South Korean axis. We will be taking a look at the Korean War, and very possibly President Yoon was intending to re-spark that. We're going to begin this program by taking a look at one of the many generals from Manchuria who served the Japanese in World War II and prior to World War II. And he then was placed in charge of the border forces for South Korea by Syngman Rhee. And that was General Kim, capital K-I-M, last name Suk-won, capital S-U-K hyphen W-O-N, from his Wikipedia entry. Kim Suk-won, September 29, 1893 to August 6th of 1978, was a Korean officer in the Imperial Japanese Army during World War II. Kim was one of the highest-ranking ethnic Koreans in the Japanese Army during the Second World War. He later became a general in the Republic of Korea Army during the Korean War. During the 1931 invasion of Korea, Kim was captain of a mechanized artillery division, which had a distinguished combat record. After the 1937 outbreak of the Second Sino-Japanese War, Kim was further promoted to major and assigned to the IJA 20th Division based outside of Seoul, which was a singular indication of the trust he had attained within the Japanese military. And the next section, the Second Sino-Japanese War. Kim was dispatched to mainland China in July of 1937. Prior to departing, he announced that he intended to die for the emperor in battle and asked that the school be established in his memory to be partly... One more time. Prior to departing, he announced that he intended to die for the emperor in battle and asked that the school be established in his memory to be financed partly by the 700 won reward money he had received from Emperor Hirohito for his previous victories in Manchuria. However, this request alarmed the officials in the Japanese administration in Korea, who felt that such a school in honor of an ethnic Korean might foster Korean nationalism. One more time. However, this request alarmed the officials in the Japanese administration in Korea, who felt that such a school in honor of an ethnic Korean might foster Korean nationalism. Kim distinguished himself again in the Battle of Dingwon, capital D-I-N-G-W-N, on July 28th of 1937, where he led two companies of Japanese soldiers in a seven-hour hand-to-hand combat that smashed a Chinese division. He was awarded several medals, and the Governor General of Korea gave his permission for a school, the Wonsuk Academy, to be founded in 1938. This academy is known today as Sung Nam Junior and Senior High School, S-E-O-N-G-N-A-N. Following the 1939 implementation of the Soshi Kaimai, or name change policy, Kim adopted the Japanese-style name Shakugen Kaneyama, capital S-H-A-K-U-G-E-N, then K-A-N-E-Y-A-M-A, by adding the character for mountain, unquote, to his Korean surname. Kim, his Japanese given name, Shakugan, was just the Japanese reading of his Korean name. In March of 1939, he was promoted to lieutenant colonel after returning to Seoul, reassigned to the 78th Infantry Regiment of the IJA 20th Division, located in Yongsan. He was awarded the Order of the Golden Kite Third Class. In 1944, Kim was further promoted to colonel. He was active on the home front in Korea during this time, giving speeches at schools and publishing articles in the official newspaper Shinbo Mail, encouraging Korean youth to volunteer to serve in the Japanese Army. He was also instrumental in the implementation of the draft on the Korean Peninsula, which began on January 20th, 1944. The next section, the most important for our purposes, after World War II. After the surrender of Japan ended World War II, Kim joined the Provisional Government of the Republic of Korea's Military Affairs Commission and later the Republic of Korea Army, where he held the rank of Brigadier General. In 1948, President Syngman-Rhee put Kim in charge of the South Korean border units. Very important here, one more pun. In 1948, President Syngman-Rhee put Kim in charge of the South Korean border units. And we're going to come back to what happened in the Korean War. Later, we're going to talk about some of the people involved in dividing Korea. Now, recall in our conversations with Monty, in the Sunrise negotiations in 1945 with Alan Dulles, one of the top Japanese negotiators, mentioned that Korea, or basically was opining or made the point that Korea was deemed essential for the Japanese in terms of rice production, because most of the rice producing the good arable land in Korea is south of the 38th parallel. But the division of the 38th parallel is very interesting for our purposes. Turning once again to Wikipedia, the entry for Charles H. Bonespiel. That's Bonespiel. After carrying out a series of command and staff assignments, he served in the U.S. and Europe during World War II in a number of senior positions. With the surrender of Japan imminent, Bonespiel, General George A. Lincoln, and Colonel Dean Rusk of the Strategy Policy Committee at the Pentagon were tasked with drawing up General Order No. 1 to define the areas of responsibility for American, Soviet, and Chinese forces. On August 10th, 1945, by the way, the day after the bomb was dropped on Nagasaki, on August 10th, 1945, with Soviet forces already moving through Manchuria into northern Korea, Bonespiel proposed the 38th parallel as the division of Korea. And again, his compatriot in doing that, Colonel Dean Rusk, who was JFK's Secretary of State and kept dutifully silent when JFK was assassinated. And about Dean Rusk and some of his affiliations, and again, the policy in Asia was set forth in the concluding episodes of a long series I did on Chiang Kai-shek and the narco-fascism of the Kuomintang for the record programs 1195 through number 1214. We're going to turn briefly to the book The Hidden History of the Korean War by I.F. Stone, published in softcover by Monthly Review Press. And of Dean Rusk, we read, "The 16 nations which had contributed troops to the war in Korea had no direct liaison with the, quote, unified command, unquote, in Tokyo. Their channel of communication was indirect. The, quote, unified command, unquote, reported to the United States Chiefs of Staff, which in turn reported to the State Department. The State Department assigned an assistant secretary of state to meet once a week with a committee representing the 16 nations to give them their briefing. But this official, Dean Rusk, was himself the darling of the China lobby and even declared in a speech at the Waldorf Astoria on May 18th that the U.S. recognized Chiang Kai-shek because he, quote, more authentically represents the views of the great body of the people of China, unquote, and would help them if they tried to throw off communist, quote, tyranny, unquote. Well, again, we talked about the narco-fascism of Chiang Kai-shek in that long series of programs that I mentioned for the record 1195 through number 1214. Now, in understanding South Korea, one has to understand the Chaebol. I may be mispronouncing that. There's a couple Chaebol. They are the giant family-controlled corporations in South Korea. And they have their genesis not only with the Japanese occupation, colonial occupation of Korea, but also with the U.S. capitalization of South Korea in the wake of the Korean War. And we're going to read about that from the Council on Foreign Relations publication from April 5th of 2018 by Eleanor Albert, A-L-B-E-R-T, South Korea's Chaebol Challenge. Many of South Korea's Chaebol date to the period of Japanese occupation before the end of World War II, modeling themselves after Japan's powerful industrial and financial conglomerates known as Zaibatsu. As U.S. and international aid flowed into Seoul following the Korean War, 1950 to 1953, the government provided hundreds of millions of dollars in special loans and other financial support to Chaebol as part of a concerted effort to rebuild the economy, especially critical industries such as construction, chemicals, oil, and steel. These enterprises flourished under the leadership of General Park Chung-hee, who led a military coup in 1961 and then served as president from 1963 to 1979. Again, began his start in the Imperial Japanese military, and a Japanese diplomat observed that he spoke Japanese so fluently he could have been Japanese himself. Continuing, speaking of the table and skipping down, the top five taken together represent approximately half of the Korean stock market's value. Chaebol drives the majority of South Korea's investment in research and development and employ people around the world. Samsung Electronics, the largest Samsung affiliate, employs more than 300,000 people globally, more than Apple's 123,000 and Google's 88,000 combined. Which of the largest chaebol? Samsung, founded in 1938 when Japan was in control of Korea. Samsung, founded in 1938. Samsung Group is South Korea's most profitable chaebol, but it began as a small company that exported goods such as fruit, dried fish, and noodles, primarily to China. Today, the conglomerate is run by second and third generations of the Lee family, the second wealthiest family in Asia, according to Forbes. Over the past 80 years, the company has diversified to include electronics, insurance, ships, luxury hotels, hospitals, an amusement park, and an affiliated university. Its largest and most recognized subsidiary is Samsung Electronics, which for the past decade has accounted for more than 14% of South Korea's gross domestic product, or GDP. Hyundai. Hyundai Group was a small construction business when it opened in 1947, but grew immensely to have dozens of subsidiaries across the automotive, shipbuilding, financial, and electronics industries. In 2003, following the Asian financial crisis and the death of its founder, Chung Ju-jung, the chaebol broke up into five distinct forms. Among the standout offshoots are Hyundai Motor Group, the third-largest car maker in the world, and Hyundai Heavy Industries, the world's largest shipbuilding company, SK Group. The conglomerate known as SK Holdings dates back to the early 1950s when the Choi family acquired Songkyung Textiles. Today, the chaebol oversees around 80 subsidiaries, which operate primarily in the energy, chemical, financial, shipping, insurance, and construction industries. It is best known for SK Telecom, the largest wireless carrier in South Korea, and its semiconductor company SK Hynix, the world's second-largest maker of memory chips, LG. LG Corporation, which derives its name from the merger of Lucky with Gold Star, got its start in 1947 in the chemical and plastics industries. Since the 1960s, the company, under the direction of the Ku family, has heavily invested in the development of consumer electronics, telecommunications, networks, and power generation, as well as its chemical business, which includes cosmetics and household goods. In 2005, LG split, spinning off a separate entity called GS, a chaebol whose core businesses are in energy, retail, sports, and construction. Lotte. Shin Kyuk Ho, SHIN KYUK-HO, founded Lotte Group in Tokyo in 1948 and brought the chewing gum company to South Korea in 1967. The conglomerate's main businesses are concentrated in food products, discount and department stores, hotels and theme parks and entertainment, as well as finance, construction, energy, and electronics. Lotte Confectionery is the third largest gum manufacturer in the world. In 2017, the company opened the Lotte World Tower in Seoul, the tallest building in South Korea, with 123 stories. And about the chaebol, the next excerpt comes from an article called "The Enemy Within, Shadow of Japanese Past Hangs Over South Korea," from as an Agence France Press story, from France24.com from March 7th of 2019. And speaking of Hyundai, a spinoff of Samsung. Some of the South's biggest conglomerates were founded during the colonial period. High-profile executives, including Hyundai Group's chairwoman, Hyung-Jung-Yoon, HYUN-JEONG-EUN, have sued to remove ancestors' names from the collaborators' list. And that is more than a little interesting. More about the chaebol and some of their influence on South Korea. Again, Hyundai was a spinoff of Samsung, which got its start in the Japanese colonial period. And again, as we looked at in the first article in our last program, one could not really understand the contemporary South Korean landscape without understanding the influence of Imperial Japan on that. And again, with the U.S. anti-China push, both South Korea and Japan are key elements of the anti-Chinese coalition that the U.S. has put together. A New York Times article from December 18th of 2023, what to know about the Chaebol families that dominate South Korea's economy, and this is by Victoria Kim and Daisuke Wakabayashi, W-A-K-A-B-A-Y-A-S-H-I. And skipping down, we read, Chaebol families have controlled South Korea's biggest companies for generations. The Chaebol system is a legacy of South Korea's history. After an armistice ended the Korean War in 1953, the country's military bit payers alerted a handful of families for special loans and financial support to rebuild the economy. The companies expanded quickly and moved from industry to industry until they morphed into sprawling conglomerates. Even as the companies grew in size, wealth, and influence, and sold shares on stock exchanges, they remained under family control, typically run by a chairman who also presided as head of the family. Generational leadership changes have sometimes unsettled Chaebol families, forcing companies to split or spin off into smaller groups. More than two decades ago, during a family struggle, Hyundai was divided among the founder's six sons. The eldest son took control of Hyundai Motors, now one of South Korea's biggest companies. And skipping down, Chaebol families have had cozy relationships with the political leadership. Patronage from political leaders was crucial for the Chaebol company's growth into industrial conglomerates, particularly under the regime of Park Chung-hee, who came to power in a coup and ran the country for two decades until his assassination in 1979. It again got his start in the Japanese military in World War II, as we have looked at. And again, the Chaebol, many of them got their start during the Japanese colonial period or in the immediate aftermath following the Korean War. And again, they were modeled after the Zaibatsu, the giant family trust that dominate the Japanese economic landscape. Continuing. For Mr. Park, the Chaebol were an instrument. For Mr. Park, the Chaebol were an instrumental part of his ambition to enrich and industrialize South Korea. To that end, his government steered funds to companies that were cooperative with his agenda, protected them from competition, and spared them from public accountability. While the close ties between the government and the businesses have lessened in recent decades, political leaders still frequently turn to them for support or counsel. In turn, the companies have at times been shielded as being too vital to the economy or to be broken up or scrutinized, something critics have assailed as, quote, a too-big-to-jail, unquote, problem. This summer, Chaebol heads traveled with South Korean President Yoon Suk-yeol on a trip to Europe as part of South Korea's bid for the World Expo. They also accompanied him on his visit to the U.S. to meet with President Biden and were among the guests at a White House dinner. And the next section, several scandals have tarnished their public image. Chaebol companies had become enmeshed in political corruption cases. One of South Korea's biggest political scandals in recent years demonstrated the close ties between the political leaders and the family-run conglomerates. Park Jun-hee, the country's former president, was ousted from office in 2017 and later sentenced to prison after she was convicted of bribery, abuse of power, and other criminal charges. Ms. Park and a longtime confidant were found to have collected or demanded bribes from three Chaebol conglomerates, Samsung, SK, and Lotte. Ms. Park was pardoned in 2021 after serving almost 5 years of a 20-year sentence. And again, she was the daughter of Park Chung-hee. Lee Jae-yong, chairman of Samsung Electronics, the country's biggest Chaebol, was also sentenced to 2.5 years in prison for his role. He was paroled and later pardoned by President Yoon in 2022, a move that allowed him to return to running the company. And again, do note that we're going to take a look now at one of the major bones of contention that has led to the extreme unpopularity of President Yu of the People's Power Party. And again, his election, I think, could be attributed in part to the, quote, suicide, unquote, note the quotes of Park Won-soon. And the next article is an AP article from June 3rd of 2023. South Korean plan aims to heal forced labor feud with Japan by Kim Tong-hyung and Hyung Jin Kim. That's K-I-M, capital P-O-N-G, hyphen, capital H-Y-U-N-G, and capital H-Y-U-N-G, hyphen, hyphen J-I-N, capital K-I-M. This again from June 3rd of 2023. South Korea took a step toward improving ties with its traditional rival Japan on Monday, announcing a plan to compensate Koreans who performed forced labor during Tokyo's colonial rule that doesn't require Japanese companies to contribute to the reparations. One more time. South Korea took a step toward improving ties with its traditional rival Japan on Monday, announcing a plan to compensate Koreans who performed forced labor during Tokyo's colonial rule that doesn't require Japanese companies to contribute to the reparations. The plan reflects Conservative President Yoon Suk-yeol's push to mend trade ties with Japan and solidify security cooperation among Seoul, Tokyo, and Washington to better cope with North Korea's nuclear threats. President Joe Biden quickly hailed it as a, quote, groundbreaking new chapter, unquote, of cooperation between two of the U.S.'s closest allies. The South Korean plan, which relies on money raised in South Korea, drew immediate domestic backlash from former forced laborers and their supporters. They have demanded direct compensation from the Japanese companies and a fresh apology from the Japanese government. Many forced laborers are already dead, and survivors are in their 90s. Among the 15 victims involved in a 2018 South Korean court ruling that ordered two Japanese companies, Nippon Steel and Mitsubishi Heavy Industries, to compensate them, only three are still alive, and they are all in their 90s. South Korean Foreign Minister Park Jin told a televised news conference the victims will be compensated through a local, state-run foundation that will be funded by civilian donations. He said South Korea hopes that Japanese companies will also make voluntary contributions to the foundation. Quote, if we compare it to a glass of water, I think that the glass is more than half full with water. We expect that the glass will be further filled moving forward based on Japan's sincere response, unquote, Park said. Later Monday, Yoon called the South Korean step, quote, a determination to move toward future. Future-oriented Korea-Japan ties, unquote. He said both governments must strive to help their relations enter a new era, according to Yoon's office. South Korean officials didn't elaborate on which companies would finance the foundation. But in January, Shin Kyu-sun, chairperson for the Foundation for Victims of Forced Mobilization by Imperial Japan, which would be handling the reparations, said the funds would come from South Korean companies that benefited from a 1965 Seoul-Tokyo treaty that normalized their relations. And again, not only Nobusuke Kishi, but Mr. Sugima and also Park Chung-hee were involved in that treaty. Continuing. The 1965 accord was accompanied by hundreds of millions of dollars in economic aid and loans from Tokyo to Seoul, but were used in development projects carried out by major South Korean companies, including POSCO, P-O-S-C-O, now a global giant, now a global steel giant. POSCO said Monday that it will actively consider a contribution to the foundation if it receives an official request. Japan insists all wartime compensation issues were settled under the 1965 treaty and retaliated for South Korean court-ordered compensation from the Japanese companies by slapping export controls on chemicals vital to South Korea's semiconductor industry in 2019. South Korea, then governed by Yoon's liberal predecessor Moon Jae-in, that's capital M-O-O-N, capital J-A-E hyphen I-N, accused Japan of weaponizing trade and subsequently threatened to terminate a military intelligence sharing agreement with Tokyo, a major symbol of their three-way security cooperation with Washington. Their feuding complicated U.S. efforts to reinforce cooperation with its two key Asian allies in the face of confrontations with China and North Korea. In his statement, Biden said that he looks forward to continuing to enhance the trilateral prize, adding, quote, "Our countries are stronger and the world is safer and more prosperous when we stand together," unquote. On Monday, the U.S. flew a nuclear-capable B-52 bomber to the Korean Peninsula for a joint drill with South Korean warplanes. South Korea's defense ministry said in a statement the B-52's deployment demonstrated the allies', quote, "decisive, overwhelming capacities," unquote, to deter North Korean aggressions. During a parliamentary session on Monday, Japanese Prime Minister Fumio Kishida said he stands by Japan's previous expression of regrets and apologies over its colonial wrongdoing, but said that the restoration of trade ties is a separate issue. Japanese Foreign Minister Hayashi Yoshimasa, Japanese Foreign Minister Hayashi Yoshimasa told reporters that Japan, quote, "appreciates the South Korean announcement as a step to restore good ties, but noted that it doesn't require contributions from the Japanese companies." When asked about South Korea's failure to ensure that the Japanese companies participate in the compensation of forced laborers, Park, the foreign minister, said he doesn't expect Japan's government to block, quote, "voluntary donations," unquote, by its civil sector. Later Monday, the South Korean and Japanese trade ministries simultaneously announced plans for talks to restore their trade relations. South Korea's trade ministry said it decided to suspend its dispute proceedings with the World Trade Organization over the Japanese trade curbs. Former forced laborers, their supporters, and liberal opposition lawmakers berated the government plan, calling it a diplomatic surrender. That's what the Japanese blogger was talking about in the first article that we read in For the Record 1369. Continuing. About 20 to 30 activists rallied near Seoul's foreign ministry, blowing horns and shouting slogans, quote, "We condemn the Yoon government," unquote, and, quote, "withdraw the announcement," unquote. Lim Jae-sung, a lawyer for some of the plaintiffs, called the South Korean plan an absolute win by Japan, which insists it cannot spend 1 yen, unquote, on forced laborers. He said lawyers will press ahead with steps aimed at liquidating the Japanese company's assets in South Korea to secure the reparations. The main liberal opposition Democratic Party called on Yoon to immediately stop what it called, quote, "a humiliating diplomacy," unquote, for Japan and withdraw its plan. The opposition to the government's announcement cast doubts on the prospects to end the disputes. When the Democratic Party led by Moon was in power, it took steps to dissolve a foundation funded by Japan to compensate Korean women forced to work as sex slaves during World War II because it didn't have the victims' consent. Despite the backlash, Yoon has likely decided to press ahead with steps to ease the disputes with Japan to bolster the alliance with the U.S. because, quote, "there is no magic solution that can satisfy everyone," unquote, said Bong Yong-shik, an expert at Seoul's Yonsei Institute for North Korean Studies. He said Yoon likely felt pressure to boost defense against North Korea's advancing missile threats. Choi Eun-mi, a Japan expert at South Korea's Asian Institute for Policy Studies, said it has been obvious that the third-party reimbursement of forced laborers was the only realistic solution for South Korea because there are, quote, fundamental, unquote, disagreements with Japan over the 2018 court rulings. And again, this was the despair that was alluded to by the Japanese blogger, the despair on the part of many South Koreans on the Japanese domination or the consummate influence of Japan in contemporary South Korea. And the next article is from Kyodo News from May 27th of 2024. South Korea fund lacks money to compensate wartime labor victims, report. A South Korean government-backed foundation passed with paying compensation to plaintiffs who won lawsuits over wartime labor during Japan's colonial rule of the Korean Peninsula is short some 12 billion won or $8.8 million in paying damages to the plaintiffs, the foundation chief said on Monday. Shin Kyu-sun, director of the foundation, told Jung Ang Ilbo, a South Korean newspaper, that he hopes the Japanese business sector will contribute to the group so it can pay damages to plaintiffs, including those who won their lawsuits recently. In March of last year, the government of South Korean President Yoon Suk-yeol decided to compensate the plaintiffs and bereaved family members with money from the government-backed fund rather than seeking restitution directly from the Japanese companies that were sued in a bid to improve ties with Japan. One more time. In March of last year, that would be 2023, the government of South Korean President Yoon Suk-yeol decided to compensate the plaintiffs and bereaved family members with money from the government-backed fund rather than seeking restitution directly from the Japanese companies that were sued in a bid to improve ties with Japan. Due to the 12 billion won shortfall, compensation payment for the Foundation for Victims of Forced Mobilization by Imperial Japan is now, quote, at a crossroads, unquote, Shin said. I'm again quoting, the solution of compensating through the foundation will gain the support from the South Korean public only if Japanese businesses participate in the funding, Shin said, while also requesting further donations from South Korean companies. The foundation has received 4 billion won from South Korean steelmaker POSCO Company. Ties between Seoul and Tokyo deteriorated after South Korea's top court in October and November of 2018 upheld orders in separate judgments against Nippon Steel Corporation and Mitsubishi Heavy Industries Limited, requiring that they pay damages for forced labor during the colonial rule between 1910 and 1945. The top court in December of last year and January of this year made similar rulings, ordering several Japanese companies, including Nippon Steel and Mitsubishi Heavy, to pay damages to South Korean plaintiffs. And what we're going to talk about next is a traditional feature of South Korean politics, and that is tarring critics with the commie brush. And this again from the Asia Pacific Journal. This from January 11th of 2021 by Mak Chung Paik, capital M-A-K, hyphen C-H-U-N-G, last name capital P-A-I-K. On eradicating the vestiges of pro-Japanese collaborators, and this reads, skipping down, joining hands with former collaborators, Syngman Rhee announced that the most pressing issues of the post-liberation era would be anti-communism and the establishment of a separate government in the South. The colonial Japanese government collectively stigmatized all Korean resistance fighters as commies, unquote, regardless of their actual political affiliations, thereby initiating a practice that continues to ripple through many of Korea's present-day social issues. Through the post-liberation years and the Korean War of 1950 to 1953, the act of labeling someone a, quote, commie, unquote, evolved from a tool for covering up one's former pro-Japanese activities into a ubiquitous political weapon that was actively used to remove anyone who was critical of Rhee's government and the establishment. In the six decades of division since the Korean War ended in a, quote, ceasefire, unquote, the association between Japanese collaborators and the anti-communist movement has become entangled with various other elements, fueling the rise of powerful and complex forces that continue to subsist off the division system. As mentioned, immediately after Korea's liberation in 1945, collaborators who would reap the benefits of pro-Japanese activities during the colonial period took cover under the banner of anti-communist and pro-American causes. Since then, the vestiges of Japanese colonial rule have used various other ostensible causes, e.g. liberal democracy, regional rivalry, Christian values, to similar effect, thus cementing their status as a cornerstone upholding the system of the North-South division. One more time. The colonial Japanese, reading section of this, the colonial Japanese government collectively stigmatized all Korean resistance fighters as, quote, commies, unquote, regardless of their actual political affiliations, thereby initiating a practice that continues to ripple through many of Korea's present-day social issues. Through the post-liberation years and the Korean War, the act of labeling someone a, quote, commie, unquote, evolved from a tool for covering up one's former pro-Japanese activities into a ubiquitous political weapon that was actively used to remove anyone who was critical of Lee's government and the establishment. And that same tarring with the commie brush was used by President Yoon in the very recent past. And this is from an article from The Nation magazine that we will read from December 4th of 2024 by John Carl Baker, B-A-K-E-R. South Korean protesters thwarted more than just a coup attempt. Skipping down. In August of 2023, a speech a few days before he visited Camp David, one more time. In an August 2023 speech a few days before he visited Camp David, Yoon warned of a fifth column of, quote, anti-state forces, unquote, working to destroy South Korea from the inside out. The forces of communist totalitarianism, quote, he declared, again quoting, have always disguised themselves as democracy activists, human rights advocates, or progressive activists while engaging in despicable and unethical tactics and false propaganda, unquote. Yoon similarly cited the threat posed by anti-state elements, unquote, and North Korean sympathizers when he announced the imposition of martial law. So again, note that the tactic originally developed to cover up pro-Japanese collaboration activities and then used to tar anyone who opposed Syngman Rhee has continued and was used by President Yoon in his declaration of martial law. And that it appears that there was much more involved in the declaration of martial law than declaring martial law. The following is from People's Dispatch of December 13th of 2024. It's by Ju Hyun Park, capital J-U, hyphen capital H-Y-U-N, capital P-A-R-K. Was South Korea's coup an attempt to restart the Korean War? And it reads, opposition lawmakers are alleging the full scope of President Yoon's coup involved a months-long plot to trigger a, quote, limited war, unquote, with North Korea. As South Korea's political crisis continues following President Yoon's failed attempt to declare martial law on December 3rd, new details are emerging in the country's legislature that suggest the full scope of Yoon's coup plot may have included plans to trigger a, quote, limited war, unquote, with North Korea. Planning documents circulated among accomplices prior to the martial law order also demonstrate that Yoon and former Defense Minister Kim Jong-un looked to pass martial law orders as precedents, including those issued prior to the Gwangju massacre and the Jeju massacre. A possible timeline of how Yoon's coup plans, one more time, a possible timeline of how Yoon's coup plans interacted with escalations against North Korea has begun to emerge. Yoon's tenure in office has been characterized by unbridled aggression against Pyongyang and a cozy military relationship of Washington and Tokyo that sent tensions soaring throughout Northeast Asia. It is now known that Yoon's coup plans began in July of 2023. Upon coming into office in 2022, Yoon adopted a military policy towards North Korea known as the Kill Chain Doctrine, which advocates the use of preemptive strikes in the event of suspected attacks. Over the next 2 years, the rate and magnitude of joint military exercises with the U.S. exploded. Over 200 days of U.S. Republic of Korea war games were held in Korea in 2023, And in August of this year, the two countries held their first joint nuclear tabletop exercise to rehearse plans for a nuclear strike on the peninsula. Consequently, Inter-Korean relations have entered a historic nadir. In December of 2023, North Korea took the unprecedented step of renouncing its policy of peaceful reunification. And the next section, from garbage war to limited war. And again, note that among the things that appears to have been planned were provocations using soldiers wearing North Korean uniforms to do various things, including killing South Korean political figures and very possibly attacking American military personnel and killing them as well. The next section, from garbage war to limited war. Following this historic falling out between the two Korean governments, tensions spiked along the de facto land and sea borders of the divided peninsula. One of the more iconic signs of the deteriorating relationship have come in the form of garbage-laden balloons landing in South Korea from the north. For decades, Pyongyang tolerated U.S.-funded NGOs in the south sending propaganda balloons across the DMZ. The fleets of garbage balloons that North Korea began to fly south this spring marked an end to this policy of patience. In Seoul, the garbage balloons triggered a series of escalatory actions over the course of the summer. But in October, a new line was crossed. For the first time, North Korea reported a series of drone incursions into its territory, an allegation which South Korea's defense ministry stated it could not confirm at the time. The incident led to Pyongyang detonating roads and bridges at the DMZ in an attempt to forestall potential invasion. Now, lawmakers are alleging the drone incursion may have been part of a months-long effort to trigger a military response from North Korea that would end in a, quote, limited war, unquote. On Sunday, December 8th, a military container used to house drones and launchers caught fire. The next day, Democratic Party lawmaker Park Byung-jae announced he had received a tip from a military whistleblower alleging South Korea's armed forces were responsible for the drone incursion in October. On December 10th, Kim Yong-dae, head of Drone Operations Command, submitted the questioning by the South Korean parliament. He explained to lawmaker Kim Byung-ju that the fire was caused by a short circuit. However, when Kim Byung-ju inquired who ordered Drone Operations Command to send a drone to Pyongyang, Kim Yong-dae replied, quote, I cannot confirm that, unquote. Kim Yong-dae provided an identical answer to the lawmaker's follow-up question inquiring where the drones had been launched from. This prompted Kim Byung-ju to accuse the military of setting the fire in order to destroy evidence of the drone incursion. One more time. This prompted Kim Byung-ju to accuse the military of setting the fire in order to destroy evidence of the drone incursion. Suspicions of a plot to restart the Korean War have also been raised by lawmaker Lee Ki-hyun, who reported on December 7th to the National Assembly that former Defense Minister Kim Jong-un attempted to order a direct strike on North Korea in order to, quote, hit the origin of the garbage balloons, unquote, on November 28th, just a week prior to the coup attempt on December 3rd. The Joint Chiefs of Staff had denied that such an order was given and reiterated the military's position that a strike in retaliation of the garbage balloons would only be authorized in the event that they caused injury or death, meaning the balloons. Meanwhile, correctional officials reported that Defense Minister Kim, who was detained on Sunday, December 8th, attempted suicide in custody on the evening of December 10th. He is in stable condition and remains in detention awaiting an expected indictment. While lawmakers allege that Yoon's objective was to foment a, quote, limited war, unquote, any attack by either Korean government on each other's de facto territory could rapidly escalate to a conflict involving the U.S., Russia, and China. All three of these countries have strategic military agreements on the peninsula. By the way, North Korea is now a nuclear power. Continuing. The next section, A Massacre in the Making. Other emerging details have demonstrated premeditated plans for repression in Yoon's coup. Lawmaker Chu Mi-ah has circulated planning documents from the martial law order that reference the infamous massacres that put down popular uprisings in Jeju and Gwangju. From 1948 to 1949, South Korean soldiers, police, and paramilitaries slaughtered between 30 and 60,000 people in Jeju, that's capital J-E-J-U, and burned 70% of the island's villages as part of a scorched earth campaign conducted in response to a local armed insurgency against U.S. occupation and the impending 1948 election to establish the Republic of Korea, which was opposed by a majority of Koreans at the time. Again, this is something Americans don't know. From 1948 to 1949, South Korean soldiers, police, and paramilitaries slaughtered between 30 and 60,000 people in Jeju and burned 70% of the island's villages as part of a scorched earth campaign conducted in response to a local armed insurgency against U.S. occupation and the impending 1948 election to establish the Republic of Korea, which was opposed by a majority of Koreans at the time. The counterinsurgency war in Jeju was prosecuted with the knowledge, support, and oversight of the U.S. military. In Gwangju, paratroopers acting under the orders of then-Dick favorite Chun Doo-hwan killed up to 2,000 residents of the city and engaged in a campaign of mass torture and rape. The incident occurred after Chun's declaration of martial law on May 17, 1980, prompting students and workers in the city to rebel against the military and establish a people's government that lasted for 9 days and resembled the Paris Commune. Once again, U.S. support and foreknowledge was critical to enabling the massacre. President Jimmy Carter directed the Pentagon to assist Chun. South Korean paratroopers were permitted to be transferred from the DMZ, and an aircraft carrier and reconnaissance planes were deployed to the area. Evidence of Yoon's plans for repression go beyond historical citation. Chu Mi-ah has further revealed plans to secure hospitals in the early phases of the martial law order, a sign that she claims indicates preparations for acts of mass violence. Several high-ranking military and police officials have attested to receiving personal orders from President Yoon to arrest key political figures, including opposition leader Lee Jae-myung. In an exclusive interview with JPBC News, a special forces officer revealed that second-day plans for the martial law order included the deployment of South Korea's 7th and 13th Airborne Brigades to Seoul, the South Korean capital. The next is allegations of the next section, allegations of a wider plot. Further testimony at the National Assembly suggests a grander plan for war than the, quote, limited war, unquote, theory outlined above. Citing anonymous military sources, lawmaker Kim Byung-joo, a former four-star general, told fellow lawmakers on December, this is improperly edited, take three. Citing anonymous military sources, lawmaker Kim Byung-joo, a former four-star general, told fellow lawmakers on December 10th that 20 members of the Special Forces Headquarters Intelligence Department, or HIB unit, quote, were on standby at a location in Seoul, unquote, on the night of the martial law order. Kim claims the HIB unit would have been mobilized to the National Assembly to arrest lawmakers and questioned whether they would have killed those who resisted, possibly while wearing fake North Korean uniforms. One more time. Kim claims the HIB unit would have been mobilized to the National Assembly to arrest lawmakers and questioned whether they would have killed those who resisted, possibly while wearing fake North Korean uniforms. The HIB unit is normally deployed to the DMZ and is tasked with operations in North Korea, including sabotage, kidnappings, and assassinations. Kim has also said that the HIB unit's second-day orders were to cause disturbances at the National Election Commission, saying, quote, They were not a simple arrest team, unquote. Kim is calling for further investigation. On December 13th, independent journalist Kim Yo-jun appeared before the National Assembly with a bombshell claim. According to Kim, whose studio was targeted by the military, in the early hours of the coup attempt, a source from, quote, the embassy of an, one more time. On December 13th, influential independent journalist Kim Yo-jun, that's K-I-M, E-O, hyphen J-U-N, appeared before the National Assembly with a bombshell claim. According to Kim, whose studio was targeted by the military in the early hours of the coup attempt, a source from, quote, the embassy of an allied country, unquote, told him Yoon planned to assassinate Han Dong-hoon, the leader of the president's ruling party, on the night of the martial law order. Kim Yo-jun claimed special forces in North Korean uniforms were to act as a, quote, an assassination squad, unquote, undertaking the following plot. Quote, first, Han Dong-hoon is to be assassinated during transportation after his arrest. Second, attack the arrest unit according Cho, quote, one more time. Second, attack the arrest unit escorting Cho Hook, Young Jung Shul, and myself, pretending to rescue them. Third, North Korean military uniforms will be buried at a specific location. Fourth, after some time, the uniforms will be discovered, and the incident will be attributed to North Korea, unquote. Cho Cook is an anti-Yoon politician who leads the Minority Korea Rebuilding Party, and Yang Jong-chul is an influential former aide of former President Moon Jae-un. Kim Yo-jun also said he received tips that Yoon planned to, quote, kill American soldiers to induce the U.S. to bomb North Korea, unquote, and that a biochemical terror attack had also been under consideration. Yoon would have thereby manufactured a situation from which he could emerge as the, quote, reunification president, unquote, who successfully ended Korea's division by means of conquest. Last, one more time. Kim Yo-jun also said he received tips that Yoon planned to, quote, kill American soldiers to induce the U.S. to bomb North Korea, unquote, and that a biochemical terror attack had also been under consideration. Yoon would thereby have manufactured a situation from which he could emerge as the, quote, reunification president, unquote, who successfully ended North Korea's division by means of conquest. Journalist Kim further alleged that the First Lady, Kim Jun-hee, had also made contact with an old boy, a term for retired intelligence agent. Though he could not confirm the content of the call, journalist Kim raised the matter before the Nationalist Assembly. One more time. Though he could not confirm the content of the call, journalist Kim raised the matter before the National Assembly out of consideration, quote, that her husband is the commander-in-chief, so if there is even the slightest possibility these calls are related to disturbing public order, no risk should be taken, unquote. Journalist Kim called on the National Assembly to restrict the First Lady's communications. The Democratic Party has vowed to investigate further, while the ruling People's Power Party floor leader Kwon Sung-dong dismissed the testimony as, quote, fake news, unquote. The U.S. Embassy in South Korea denied that it had provided information to Kim Yo-jun, clarifying that U.S. intelligence would have been able to distinguish a false North Korean attack and notified the South Korean government. However, this statement has only raised further suspicions against the U.S. Embassy in some circles due to its similarity to a pronouncement made by Congressman Brad Sherman, S-H-E-R-M-A-N, in an interview with the South Korean outlet NBC News the day before. So again, take three. Kim Yo-jun also said he received tips that Yoon planned to, quote, kill American soldiers to induce the U.S. to bomb North Korea, unquote, and that a biochemical terror attack had also been under consideration. Yoon would have thereby manufactured a situation from which he could emerge as the, quote, reunification president, unquote, who successfully ended Korea's division by means of conquest. And again, this has been dismissed by the ruling party as fake news. That is not the only resonance with what is going on with Donald Trump and in the U.S. Yoon supporters have basically demonstrated outside the South Korean parliament, claiming stop the steal, unquote. And please do, when it is ready, it is not ready yet, maybe we'll include all of the programs we're doing on Korea, please do get the new 64-gigabyte flash drive containing all of my life's work, and again, we'll include the series, the ongoing series we're doing about Korea, and it contains all of the comments by Tara Fractal, and also a mini library of old anti-fascist books on easy-to-download PDF files. I get no money whatsoever from that flash drive, perhaps reinforcing my worst critics' claims that I am nuts, because it's basically my entire life's work. And again, if some of the reading has appeared bumpy, all of the articles that I have been reading from are in, will be included in the written description for the these three programs, 1368, 1369, and 1370. This concludes For the Record program number 1370, Korea on Our Minds, Part 3. This is being recorded on January 25th of the year 2025. I'm Dave Emery. Thanks for listening.